will be on site. We've got only one item on the agenda. It's a briefing by the Department of the Departmental Strategic Plan for the year 2011 to 2014. DG, we are all yours. We are in your hands. Before we do that, the secretary informs me that there are people who have chosen not to be here today.
Thank you, Chair. I've got an apology for the Deputy Minister and the Honorable DJ Taylor only. Thank you, Chair.
All your goals, yeah.
Chairperson, I think I don't know where Nkosi Mandela is. Up to now, I haven't received anything. That's the only goal that is missing.
Did you?
My apologies, please. My apologies. I don't have a cow to take to the Eastern Cape.
Thank you, Chairperson. And good morning, honorable members. May I first start by introducing my colleagues, the delegation from the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, to introduce themselves.
Good morning. My name is Nzeke Masia. I'm the new Deputy Director General for Support Services in the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform.
Morning, Honorable Chair. My name is Protas Tamsanya Pili. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of the Department.
Morning. I'm Vuse Mashangu. I'm the Acting Deputy Director General of Land Reform, but old.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Nozizo Makhalimele. I'm the old DDG of the department. I am now responsible for geospatial services, technology development, and disaster management.
Morning, Chair Members. I'm Leona Archley. I'm responsible for rural infrastructure development in the department.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Moshe Suarez. I'm dealing with a branch shortly known as STRIF that deals with social mobilization, technical support to rural people, rural enterprises, and food security, and the building of institutions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Dale. I am presently the Acting Chief Land Claims Commissioner in the Commission. Thanks a lot.
Morning, Chair. My name is Mahabuto Bebe. I'm the Head of the Secretariat for Ngonyama Transport.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Amin Mia. I'm the CFO of the Ngonyama Transport.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Belinda Benson. I'm the Head of Real Estate for the Ngonyama Transport.
Good morning, Chair.
Chairperson, I'm sorry, I thought maybe it was for the staff to introduce myself. I'm a Costa de Kulu, member of the committee. Thank you.
I am Japane, a member of this committee, declared by UDF.
Good morning. Namaste, my November, member of this committee.
Morning. Kumzile Ngwenya Mabile, member of this committee.
Sanbonan, Kumzile Kaba, member of the committee, employed by African National Congress. Thank you.
Morning. My name is Alex Stein, and I heard that some members of guests are under Swart scope.
Good morning. I'm Helen Matanyani, a member of this committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will invite the Deputy Director General of Health Services, Mr. Nseki Mashia, to present the strategic plan of the department. Chairperson, you will know that this is the second strategic plan. Since 2009, we first presented what we refer to as an interim strategic plan to the committee. We now have a detailed and comprehensive strategic plan that encapsulates the new way of doing business by government, in other words, the outcome-based approach. We've tried to blend it into the old existing statutory mandate of the department, but also to focus in the main on the new approach by government.
Again, the presentation is outlined as from what we talked to the strategic overview, having heard the CC's comment that our plan intends to showcase how we want to do business as the Department of Rural Development, but also to emphasize that today we are really talking strategic, how we intend moving forward and not getting into details which are then captured in the annual performance plan of the department. And we also showcase how our plan links to other plans and how it's linked to the business of government, and also how we talk to the outcome-based approach and our performance agreement signed by the minister with the president. As a department, we thought it's important to highlight that what is captured in this plan is actually in line with the new federal planning framework, and also incorporates the plan that this department has taken last year, what we call the interim plan. And it also takes into consideration our contribution as a department to other outcomes, as the committee can see 4, 6, 9, and 10. The part A of our strategic plan gives the overview. Actually, that's where we reflect the linking of the plan to the medium-term strategic framework of government, the 5 priorities there, and also we have taken into consideration the new growth path, strategies for growth, for job creation, and we have really focus our emphasis on rural communities. also in the plan we've taken considering the creation of 500,000 jobs as captured in the State of the Nation address, and the creation of employment opportunities for youth. And to that effect, as a department, we have a specially designed program, NARFEC, that is going to run for the next 3 years, and it aims at creating employment opportunities for 22,401 youth through that program. Our plan also has taken a consideration from the budget speech, the key issues, the reduction of unemployment, the reduction as well as the reduction of vacancy rates in the government. And as I indicated earlier on, that the department continues to focus on achieving outcome 7 and this deliverable. We would like the committee to actually look at the refined vision, the goal, the mission, and the strategy of the department. We say our vision is vibrant, equitable, sustainable rural communities. And our overarching goal there is social cohesion and development. Our mission is to initiate, facilitate, coordinate, catalyze, and implement an integrated rural development program. And our strategy there is agrarian transformation, which is interpreted to denote a rapid and fundamental change in the relation between the system and patterns of ownership and control in land, livestock, cropping, and community. We understand that values are important in delivering services. We really, as a department, take seriously but appealing accountability, work ethic, and innovation. And those values for us are not just a question of lip service. We've actually encapsulated those into senior managers' performance agreements to make sure that managers deliver, or senior managers in the department deliver and commit to those values in their delivery. I'd like to also present the key priorities of the department as captured in the strategic plan. We as a department have prioritized to improve productivity in land reform projects through effective implementation of the recapitalization and development program. We want to expedite the finalization of land claims. We want to roll out effectively the SRCP so as to improve livelihoods of rural communities. But also want to improve corporate governance so as to ensure enhanced service delivery. That the committee shall see in our strategic objectives of the department and how we have re-engineered the department to make sure that it's positioned to deliver in this manner. We also want to implement a proper change management and innovation strategies in the department. And also want to ensure efficient information systems. So with all of these priorities, we've designed specific projects and programs in other areas to make sure that we deliver on these priorities. That diagram showcases the output, 5 outputs of the outcome 7 that has been incorporated into our strategic goals. And they start the same when I present the goals. Goal number 1 is want to ensure sound corporate governance and service governance through compliance with the legal framework, and want to be there by 2014. So when we say 2014, we're saying we will start this year in 2011. But at least by 2014, we can be measured to see if our corporate governance has improved the level where we said would improve it. But we also want to ensure reformed policy, legislative, and institutional environment. We want to have effective land planning and administration that is biased towards rural areas. We also want to have institutional arrangements that are effective for corporate governance and stakeholder participation. Want to have increased access to and productive use of land, and want to improve access to affordable and diverse food by 2014. Want to have improved the rural services to support sustainable livelihoods by 2014, and want to improve access to sustainable employment and skills development opportunities by 2014. 2014 we have set to have achieved the highest target, but all this work begins this year, 2011. In the next financial year, and some of these programs are already being implemented by the department. Could you specifically talking to the legislative and other mandates, which the supreme one is the constitutional mandate, I would like to just quickly point the committee to the planned policy initiative. The department has planned to table to gathered by May 2011 the green paper on rural development and land reform. I said the department in this area is aiming at separating these papers, dealing with the rural development paper and land reform paper. We also plan to have the white paper approved by May 2012. And the policies on land ownership by foreign nationals, the proposed rural development agency, the establishment of land management commission, the land evaluation and the land tax as can be seen. Those we intend to deal with them once we have the green paper approved by cabinet. We have captured in our plan the situation analysis, and we thought it's crucial to be upfront with this so that our performance can be measured against the operational environment that we find ourselves in. We have, in our situation analysis, looked at the both external and internal factors, and we have determined as a department that we cannot do business as usual. We have then determined what will be our change agenda. As you see that in that diagram, we have showcased that there is sustained agenda, the business that the department has been implementing. But now, with the new outcomes approach, we've got a change agenda because we must be able to implement that, deliver on that, working in collaboration with other outcome contributors. But at the same time, we should continue the momentum in the work that the department has been implementing. In the performance environment, we thought it's important that we highlight that by the year 1994 to 2010, the department had approximately 7.4 million hectares of land transferred and redistributed to previously disadvantaged persons. And as of today, the CRDP has been rolled out into 60 rural wards. Again, in the organizational environment, we have captured that since the new mandate, we had to reconfigure the organization so that we can align the structure of the organization with the strategy of the organization. The organogram of the department has only been signed recently by the minister, maybe 2 weeks ago. So the department has been performing without a signed organogram, which tended to affect the reduction of vacancy rates. So the department is on course to address that issue. We have the organogram signed. We'll be dealing with reducing of vacancies, but also, more importantly, we want to ensure that we've got the staff, the warm bodies in place to make sure that we deliver on the mandate that we have promised to deliver on as a department. We thought it's important that we talk to the committee about the strategic planning process, and there I would like to again reinforce that we've taken into consideration all the priorities of government. We have sought to align our plan with an outcome-based approach and the agreement that has been signed by the minister. And that we had 8 branches in the department, and we have 9 branches consulting with relevant stakeholders to make sure that our plan is as representative of our stakeholders. I shall now move to part B that talks specifically to the strategic objectives. These strategic objectives are allocated to the 5 budget programs of the department. I would also like to declare upfront that as the department has got 9 branches, in terms of the treasury budget structure, the department is still also aligned to that budget structure through the program structure. So according to that budget structure, we have 5 programs that are captured by the department. So the objectives of the department and the goals are spread through those programs. Goal number one, as you said, is corporate governance and service excellence. The department is committed to ensuring that corporate governance is improving in the department. We want to see to it that we have got efficient human resource management practices. We want to have effective communication
want to ensure monitoring of service delivery and the experience of issues of women, children, and other persons. We want to also ensure that we coordinate and facilitate and operationalize management information system to ensure timely and quality information for management in the department. We want to improve delivery in the department through comprehensive planning and M&E. We also want to ensure that we've got efficient financial management services in the department. So all those are taken care of in program one of the department. Slide is goal two, talk to the reform policy legislation and the institutional environment. I would refer the committee to the details in the strategic plan, and I will zoom back to the program so that the colleagues can see the programs that are implementing these goals, because each program has got its purpose and the priorities are close to the goals. Program one in the department, which is called administration, exists to provide strategic and logistical support in the form of executive corporate services. It oversees the department's capital work and makes nominal contributions to the public sector education and training authority. This program's main purpose is improving corporate governance and enhancing service delivery. Hence, we're talking about programs like change management, innovation, service delivery excellence awards program. Those are all programs that we've put in place in administration to make sure that the department is the oil machine to also implement effective this mandate. Another program is the geospatial and cadastral services. This program exists to provide geospatial and cadastral surveys, special training information, as well as technical services in support of sustainable land development. Their priorities, the main one is improving efficiency of cadastral surveys management, information services, and registration of fields. This they will do by reducing the turnaround time for approval of cadastral documents, reducing time taken to register deeds and documents. They want to provide land registration services and information to support government development agenda. And also they want to reduce special inequalities in rural communities. To this effect, the department has actually designed a project of doing norms and standards so that we can address properly the issue of special inequalities in rural communities. Program 3 is rural development. This program exists to initiate, facilitate, coordinate, and catalyze the implementation of the CRPP that leads to sustainable and vibrant rural communities. The priorities for this program is to roll out the CRPP to all rural municipalities, to improve food security in rural communities by establishing food gardens and improving technologies for food production, and also, more importantly, to create jobs in rural areas through the NARASEC and infrastructure projects. Program 4 is restitution. This program is used to provide settlement of land restitution claims under the Restitution of Land Rights Act and provide settlement support to restitution beneficiaries. The key priorities for this program is to reduce backlog of land claims to settle all outstanding land claims. Program 5 is land reform. The main purpose of this program is to provide sustainable land reform programs in South Africa. And the priorities for this program are to improve productivity in land reform projects through effective implementation of the capital business development program, to acquire and allocate strategically located land. Part 3 of our policy plan talks to the link with other plans. The department has got two entities, the Agricultural Land Holding Trading Account and Ingonyama Crown Court, and also has a PPP. Now, Ingonyama Crown Court will be presenting the strategic plan as well. This slide talks to the budget summary, and I will then hand over to the CFO to talk to the budget summary for the plan.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. As the Deputy Chair has indicated that in the department we've got 9 precincts, but in terms of the program structure, we are organized into 5 programs, and that is administration, geospatial and cadastral services, program 3, rural development, program 4, transition, and program 5, land reform. In terms of budget allocation for 2011-2012 financial year, under administration, we have got a budget allocation of 606 million. Under program 2, which is geospatial and cadastral services, we've got a budget of 388 million. Under rural development, which is program 3, we've got a budget allocation of 441 million. Under restitution, which is program 4, we've got a budget allocation of 2.4 billion. Under land reform, which is program 5, we've got a budget allocation of 4.1 billion. If I were just to explain that slide, the first column there shows total allocation. The first column shows the total allocation, and then the second column shows what we call current payment, which is related to payment of services and compensation of employees. The third column is transfers and subsidies and relates mainly to grant payment, mainly for restitution and land reform. And the fourth column, which is under payment for capital assets, is related to the acquisition of those assets who are more than 5,000, which need to be capitalized in the accounting record. And then the fifth and the fourth column relates to the two outer years of the MTF period. If I may just explain the budget from the previous budget, which is for the year that is about to end, the budget has increased by 11%. The year that is about to end, the budget allocation of 7.2 billion, and the year that is about to start, has got a budget allocation of 8.1 billion, which is an 11.4 increase going forward. Maybe I were to explain the program. And administration, in the current year, we have an allocation of 770 million, and it was reduced to 600 million because the reduction of 51% in the upcoming year. For geospatial and cadastral services, in the current year, we had a budget of 486 million, it was reduced to 288 million, which is a reduction of about 20%. Under rural development, we had a budget allocation of 342 million. In the upcoming year, for a budget of 141 million, which is an increase of about 29%. For restitution, we had a budget allocation of 3.5 billion, and in the upcoming year, the budget is 2.5 billion, which is a reduction of about 30%. For land reform, we had a budget of 2.1 billion, and in the coming year, the budget allocation is 4.1 billion, which is an increase of about 98%. With an overall budget in the current year of 7.2 billion, increasing to 8.1 billion in the coming year, which is an 11.4% increase for all these programs that the DDG has alluded to. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, that was the conclusion of the presentation from the department.
You're not a young man. The CEO says this amount has been reduced by this percentage and the other one has been reduced by this percentage. Surely he's inviting questions. Can't he just volunteer the information?
Chapter 10. May I respectfully request the chairperson to repeat that question so that we respond accordingly.
I thought I was simplifying. He says this amount, the budget, has been increased by 11%. This one has been reduced by this percentage. For instance, the administration was 700 and something million. It's been dropped down to 600 and something million. but he is not explaining what is the purpose of reduction, why is there an increase, because clearly we're dealing with the strategy here. So if you're saying that this, in this strategy, this amount has been shifted to the other one because we want to achieve this, he doesn't say that. He merely says figures have been reduced without indicating the strategy behind.
Yeah, in terms of our request, thank you, Honorable Chair, in terms of our request from National Treasurer, we had requested more money for these programs where we have seen the reduction. But we have been instructed that due to financial constraint of the fiscal, we need to cut from certain of the programs. And those programs where we have seen the reduction in are the places where we have to cut, because we have been told that we need to reduce our spending. More especially as we're coming from the economic mess down.
Maybe you will tell us in the circumstances before you change the strategy, break from where you were when you requested the money to where you are when you have received the money, in terms of how to achieve these goals that you have set for yourself. But let me ask the honorable members to take the floor on this matter and others.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I also want to thank the reports for the strategic plan. I can see that it looks like there was some thinking going into this process, and thank you for that, Chairperson. I am although worried in the sense that if we look at all the strategic objectives, it's got kind of open-ended. I'm just on one page here that says establish food gardens and agri-parks and CRDP wards by 2014. And I'm sure they must have set goals for each year or at least 6 months or that kind of process going on in their own planning. The way this is, it's going to be very difficult for this portfolio to monitor and to see progress. If it's kind of open-ended, I know also it must be difficult to put more details in, but for at least for our programs, if we can have a year to see in this year, from this end of the financial year to the next financial year, in each one of these objectives, what is it? We can't come here in 2014 and then look back and reflect on 3 years and say, sorry, you either achieved or you didn't achieve. So that is my first comment about this, Chairperson. And then I'm also concerned if you look at the risk management plan, and that was my first question when I read this, thinking to myself, just the strategic objective to buy 1.4 million hectares next to it is inadequate budget. And if you read that together with the program restitution that says that they are still behind, I think, six billion rand in commitments. We asked the question last year, and I'm asking the question again. Do the department have a program in place to settle all outstanding payments? And how do they plan to buy these amounts of lands in the next 3 years if they put it themselves in the risk as financial constraints is a problem, Chairperson? That would be my starting questions. I'll give other members a chance.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, my colleague, Honorable Stein, has covered that question.
I also really feel that the department need to have short-term goals, really, where we can be in a position really to assess or do our oversight. And then in under NARISEC, unfortunately, your document is not numbered, but strictly condensed. There is a NARISEC program. So what I want to find out is how is this thing working, or how have you formulated it to work, this NARISEC program? And under program number 3, rural development, key priorities. What I want to find out now about, how are you intending to start this, how do you intend to start this rollout? CRTP, rural municipalities, improving food security, all these key priorities, how do you intend to start them and where? And then lastly, the question that was put by the chairperson to CFO, what effect these reductions have in strategic planning? That is all, chairperson, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. On page 16, because when I say between 1994 to 2010, approximately 7.4 million hectares of land were transferred. The problem we discover wherever we go for oversight, this land transferred to the people productive, but when we get there we find the just collapse, everything has gone down. Only few that have still continuing producing very well. But what strategy the department is going to use or using just to make the land or to monitor the land not to go down? We'll find that houses have been ripped off, roof destroyed, everything, and it's going to gather on that land, but it seems there's nobody is next week to monitor. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Frankly, Chair, I just want to maybe concur with Honorable saying that the department can assist us with their annual performance plan, so that they can be able to check whether I'm making it or breaking it, because this is a problem. So we can't wait long to see whether we're doing what you're planning for yourself. Chairperson, on the presentation, on the plan, the department has indicated that they will create 53,000 jobs in all self-defense initiatives. But it's not clear by 2040. That is why I'm saying if we have this annual performance, then maybe some of the questions that we're asking will be covered by that plan. You're saying in, by 2014 we'll be creating 53,000 jobs, but you're not clear that in this forthcoming financial year, 2011-2012, how many jobs are we going to create in the CRTP initiatives? Then secondly, although your final organizational structure is still in progress, But maybe can you please clarify to us that how many posts are you intending to fill out of that, out of the organogram that you have? How many posts are vacant? How many posts are you expecting to fill in this financial year based on the budget that you have? We've noted the reduction of the budget in administration, but I think you know how many posts you are intending to fill with that little amount that you have in this financial year. As the president has said this year, as a job creation year, then how many posts will be unfilled due to the financial constraints, so that you are able to track also whether is there any reduction in the vacancy rate or what. Then the last one, Chair, is on this NARISEC. Maybe an indication of how many young people in this financial year are you going to recruit? Are you going to recruit to be part of this NARISEC program? Thank you, Chair. Then the last, which areas are you going to roll out this RDP program in this forthcoming financial year?
Thank you, Chairperson. During the presentation on slide written performance environment, it has been mentioned that there are 60 road works that have been, the CRDP road has been taken up to. If one may ask, can we have the provinces where these roads are and the district as well? That's my first question. Second question, with regards to on the key priorities. Currently, what one is aware of is that the department has started doing something with regards to the development in some of the projects. And if the committee maybe can be briefed, how far has the ones gone on in developing those programs on those areas? Are they productive or non-productive? What is happening on them with regards to maybe the effect of the weather patterns, as rain is shown to be not coming in some of the areas? Thank you. Chairperson, I was saying on three priorities. It is maybe during the presentation, it was mentioned that the priorities are some of the priorities was to improve productivity on land reform project, and the question is based on that. if the presenter can maybe take us through to say on those projects, how many of them have been successful? Or if I'm clear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to do that, Chairperson. That's not my nickname. I'm Helen Matanyani, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to establish from the department. Are they having any plan for natural disasters? Because
unfortunately, most of the people that are affected are rural people. And it is expected of the department to have a plan where they'll assist the people that are affected. And the other thing is the issue on job creation. We always talk about job creation. And in most cases, you discover that when you interact with the people, the jobs that are there, they are not sure, and we are also not sure whether they are going to be sustainable. What is our intention, most especially on the people that are on these pilot projects, that are doing projects, and you know that when you deal with a project, there is a time frame for that project to finish. Where are they going? Are we skilling these people and having a plan to absorb them in the future so that they become full-time people that will ensure that they get an income and they're able to deliver what the intention of the CRDP is? And the last one is on the organogram. Chairperson, in most cases, you get to see the organogram and people are recruited. And when time goes on, there is a complaint of lack of capacity in the department. Not only this department, but in most of the departments, there's a talk about lack of capacity. Are we recruiting the people that will be able to ensure that we deliver very fast? Because if we can look, this term is fast going to its end. 2014 is not far. And we would like to be assured that the people that are going to be recruited, that are going to fill the vacancies, are going to be the people that will ensure that we deliver very fast. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, I was a bit late. I have quite a few questions. The first is further to Annette's initial concern about the broadness of a lot of these priorities and a lot of these goals. My concern is that year in and year out, we're going to come back to this committee and have the same objectives, very broad, very ambitious objectives put before this committee. And year in and year out, they won't be achieved, and the deadline will be extended from 2012 to 2014 to 2016 without any realistic hope of anything ever being completed. My question is, and it relates to the fact that this is a very broad portfolio, which relies on other departments for a lot of the implementation, whether the time has now come for rural development to drill down to the basics of what it needs to get done. And the most stark thing that comes to mind is the recapitalization program. You know, before the government goes out on this ambitious drive, you know, under the strategic priorities is to acquire more land, acquire and allocate strategically located land. I assume that's under the CLAS program. Surely there must be a focus on recapitalizing those farms that have been that have suffered as a consequence of bad management, where farmers need support, where intervention is required before the government goes out and acquires more land. And I say this specifically in the context of the fact that we still haven't heard anything about the land audit. I see it's been mentioned under geospatial, but there was talk about existing private owners registering their land, very little about whether or not the government is going to, I mean, there was something about 60,000 hectares by 2014. When is the government going to commit to a comprehensive land audit that will tell the state and that will tell the department and the people of this country how much land is in government hands and how much of that land can be used for land reform purposes. So yeah, in my view, it's time for the department to pick strategic goals, important goals, starting with recapitalization and the land audit, and actually deal with those issues. My second question is it relates to the integrated planning process. Another of the strategic goals has to do with establishing a group of five, I think it was, to coordinate the programs. There we go. Integrated cooperative governance. 37 rural development delivery forums established and operational by 2014. Five partnerships established and operational by 2014. I think given that the history of government of having a very big silo mentality where departments operate in isolation, often without even discussing things with Treasury, I wonder how ambitious this plan is. And my question is, to what extent, given that this is strategic objective or number 7 in terms of the President's State of the Nation address and in terms of government priorities as a whole, to what extent does this integrated cooperative governance planning take place with the cooperation or the assistance of Minister Manuel's planning ministry? Because I find it unlikely that the department on its own would be able to lead this kind of coordination with the kind of silos that operate in government and people saying, well, my priorities are more important than yours, let's put yours on the back burner. So if you could give us some indication of, you know, beyond the delivery forums and the partnerships, to what extent you anticipate getting buy-in from other departments in terms of getting this right. So actually two questions, but both very long. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members, for the question. Thanks to Honorable Steyn for the compliment that the Department seems to have applied itself to the formulation of the strategic plan. Indeed, we attempted to do that. Perhaps one question that is a concern for all the members, Honorable Chair, is the department breaking down the high-level strategic plan to an annual operational plan, which is what we do. We will happily present that to the committee. Which annual plan we break down also on a quarterly basis so that we know what we seek to achieve per quarter, and we are able to monitor and Treasury and the presidency, the president of the Department of Performance Monitoring is able to monitor the performance of the department on a quarterly basis. So we saw that this is a general concern that there's a need for us to present the annual performance plan of the department broken down to say at an activity level what is it that we're going to do. We will be happy to do that, Chair. The big question.
You speak like as if you're doing us a favor. Mm-hmm. You'll be happy to give us if you ordinarily shouldn't be giving us.
That was not the intention, Chairperson. My apologies. I think we've got to.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe start on this question. Maybe I think the instruction must be very clear. Because there's this tendency of working under an assumption that to the portfolio committee you present strategic plans. Then, if then details are requested,
then they must be submitted. But that is the assumption which people have been operating on to say they present strategic plans.
The person I always remember who really impressed upon us that she's doing us a favor is the Honorable Beverly Jansen, the famous Western Cape Commissioner, who, when she is called upon to supply us with information, she will say, read, it's in the file. She says, read, it is in the file. Yes, we, you see, we are spoiled because we come from the provinces. In the province, when you table your strategic plan, remember you're tabling a 5-year strategic plan together with the APP at the same time. It's not like we need to request it. So maybe at the national level is still new, but the provinces have been operating like that for some time now. I'm encouraged that the DG has realized that we deserve to get the APP as well, because I know they have been submitting shorter versions of APP to Appropriation Committee and not to us. So we are getting into the loop as well now. Thank you, DG.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Risk management, this is an area, Honorable Chair, we have been trying to be upfront about. I think if Honorable Steyn, you've seen the annual report of the Commission for 2009-10 and the previous one, they have declared the commitments. We are just merely highlighting them here to say, as we plan going into the future, we plan with those commitments that we have declared in the previous two annual reports in mind, so that we try to strike a balance between settling more claims but also reducing the backlog in our books. It is going to be a tricky exercise going forward, so we are very mindful of that.
I don't want you to give us information in installments. We want all of it. Shall we assume that the actual amounts you are referring to, amount of decrease and amount of increase, will be in the ABB? Can we assume that? Because you are vague on this one. You say you strive to reduce and increase, but you do not say how much.
Chairperson, I think I was responding to a different question, but indeed we can provide, we will provide that information. Because each one of the programs will be reflected on the APP. What is program one going to do? Where, with what resources? What is program two going to do with how much resources allocated to it? And what is program three going to do? I'm talking about rural development, program four in terms of restitution, program five in terms of land reform. So each one of those plans, there will be the operational plan linked to the budget allocated to each one of them. What we perhaps need to say up front, there was a question, Chairperson, that was asked by Honorable Mwenya Mabila to say how many of these posts, for instance, would be filled. I checked with the DDG. If we have that information readily available, I would like to appeal to the Chair that we can provide those details, because she was asking a very specific question. Given the reduction on your compensation of employees and that you have a new organogram, how many posts are you going to fill? And how many are going to remain unfilled due to the reduction of your allocation? We have agreed to appeal to the Honorable Chair to provide the exact details of that information. We don't give a guess figure here to QFF. But I'm saying on each one of the five programs that we have, there's a budget allocation. On our operational plan, we'll be able to reflect that this program is allocated so much money, and these are its tasks, and this is what it's supposed to do with these resources. Each one of them we will be able to break it down and provide it to you. Honorable Dapane, I think we have responded to the short-term goals, as you put it, to say we'll break down the APP and provide it. I think Dr. Swartz will talk to NARISEC on the question of how do we intend rolling out NARISEC, and I'll ask DDG Leona later on to respond to how we intend rolling out the CRDP onto the municipalities as we have stated in our priorities. Honorable Zulu, you raised the question on, we say we have delivered to date 7.4 million hectares, but the reality on the ground is that many of these farms are failing. That is a very correct assessment that we've been upfront about. Hence, the department introduced the recapitalization and development program. To date, we took a decision last year that we will recapitalize and develop all land reform farms acquired since 1994. We know that we can't do this on our own. We will not have all the money on our own. We will not have all the expertise. That is why we are working very closely with the provincial Department of Agriculture and the National Department of Agriculture in terms of our outcomes-based approach to look at recapitalizing all of these farms so that they can bring the expertise that we do not have. But also, we are engaging all land reform beneficiaries that have benefited from the land reform program. You may be aware that we have engaged the farm worker share equity schemes. We've been engaging those that benefited from LRAD, from SLAG. We've engaged those that have benefited from BLAS. To say they are on the ground, they experience the problems better than we do. How can we work together with them so that government can provide structured support to them? So indeed, we are creating a much more closer working relationship with farmers. We have never done this before. So there is much more closer participation and partnership. Probably what is going to happen going into the future is that each one of these land reform beneficiaries or farmers, if you like, that have benefited from land reform, will ultimately have district, provincial, and national representative bodies that will be able to engage with government as a whole. Because they don't need to just engage with us, they will need to engage with the Department of Water, they need to engage with the Departments of Agriculture in the provinces, and a whole host of other state departments, including lobbying financial institutions to provide the necessary support. So we are looking at a much more comprehensive partnership between the government, farmers that have benefited from the land reform program, and the private sector, to have a much more stronger partnership going forward so that we improve productivity on all land that has been acquired since 1994. Honorable Ngwenya Mabira, on the APP, we have responded to that. We requested to provide the details on the posts that will remain vacant, on the number of posts that will be filled vis-a-vis those that will remain vacant. I've requested Dr. Swartz to respond on the research questions and Ms. Ashari to respond on which site are we going to be rolling out to going forward. Honorable Tony Kulu, Leona, Ashari will also respond on the details per province, per district, on the 60 wards where we already have footprint. She can provide that either in the form of a written report. We've responded to the productivity of land reform farms. Honorable Matanyane, the plan on natural disasters. I will ask Dr. Makhale Mele to respond to that. We've been quite engaged in this particular area, she's the most appropriate person to respond to that. Except to say sometimes it is difficult to develop a plan for natural disasters because they are unpredictable. So but Dr. Makhalemele will discuss that. The sustainability of jobs, maybe let me just stick with that one a little bit. Where we have rolled out the Comprehensive Rural Development Program, let us start by saying the Comprehensive Rural Development Program has got three phases. Phase one, that is where we are across the country, is about meeting the basic needs, where we're providing gardens, we're engaging people, employing them. Phase two is to move from providing basic needs, making sure that there is food on the table on those households that have got nothing, but to move towards enterprise development. So we are not just looking at providing jobs for people in these rural wards or sites. We are looking at creating an environment where people can come up with enterprises. They can be entrepreneurs so that they don't just, they are not expecting government to give them jobs, but they create enterprises. We have begun to see a few of those. I think Dr. Swartz can talk a little bit more on that, where we have begun to see, even with regard to the vuvuzelas, we had a whole lot of people making them and selling them, and I think Dr. Swartz can elaborate more. Enterprise development is the next step. The third step is to make sure that there is appropriate infrastructure in rural areas. There are medium, there are small, micro industries, there are facilities, credit facilities. We rehabilitate, if you want, or we revitalize small rural towns as hubs of economic activity. That's the end goal, away from the phase one of the CRDP. Again, we hope that as these economies, with the support of government, creating the necessary environment, both to the farmers and other local economic development initiatives, there could be more job opportunities created in those particular areas without people relying on the department continuously providing a stipend for them. On the organogram, I think we've dealt with that, but I just want to emphasize, the question was, how do we ensure, now that we are moving much closer to the end of the term of this government, that the people that we recruit are the people with requisite skills that can help government deliver fast? And I think that's a very critical question, and it's always important, it's always the aim to get the right people. And for instance, in our department, we've said, what we have observed over a period of time is that there has been a lot of what we're calling inbreeding. As the organization grows and expands, the same old skills have been recycled in the department, creating little space to bring in new blood. We have insisted that going forward, as we have created new specialized divisions in the department, we'll bring in specialists in those fields of people who will bring the requisite skills. We have actually begun doing that particular exercise, but it's something that we need to be watching very carefully as we move forward. The other challenge is that sometimes these skills are not always readily available in the market. As much as there may be jobs, these skills are not readily available on the market, which requires that we may have to put resources and time to actually developing these resources, which would not help in terms of responding to that question. But it is something that we need to do going into the future. The goals are broad and ambitious. I think we try to respond to that in terms of our, to say, we will bring them down at an operational level. That's just the strategic plan as we are required to tame it. We drill down to the basics on the operational plan. We set specific targets. If you go to the presentation that shows each one of those bubbles, when we break down, if you look at the outcome-based approach, each one of those outputs have been broken down to the minutest of detail. The Bible.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. If I can briefly interrupt, I think I used the wrong word when I said too broad. By too broad, I meant there's too many. There's too much. So I do understand that you have drilled them down to their most detailed parts, and I can see that from the strategic the presentation of the strategic objectives. But what I was querying, for example, is the establishment of things like agrarian communities or whatever, when there are more basic and immediate goals which require the department's more undivided attention in the short term. My query had to do with broadness in terms of there being lots of goals, which realistically cannot all be implemented in the allocated time. It wasn't so much about the question of whether or not there was detail involved in whether or not they'd be implemented or how they would be implemented.
Now, thank you for that clarity. I think I would still go back to those bubbles where at an activity level we try to deal with the most basic of things, including providing community gardens so that people have got food. Those are the things that we are going to be doing this financial year, even going to 2014. Similarly, with regard to recapitalization, you referred to the question of government still wants to be buying more strategically located land, and yet there are so many failures. We are saying in last year already, we took a decision that will recapitalize all land reform funds acquired since 1994. Last year, we set aside a budget of 900 million to do exactly that. We are saying already this year, we have over 400 of these land reform funds that we are attending to. We've got a new target in the strategic plan going forward where we will set aside 25% of the budget of the department to make sure that those funds that we have acquired are productive. In fact, when we met with some of the farmers here in the Western Cape, there was an agreement to say between government, the farmers that have benefited from the land redistribution program, and the commercial farmers, there was an agreement to say, let us agree that our goal is going to be to make all land reform farms productive. That is the kind of understanding that we have as a department with commercial farmers and the small farmers that have benefited. So indeed, that is on our radar screen. It's something that we intend focusing on. We know that we can't do it alone. We're very much working on partnership. I raise this point of not working alone because it's a point that you raise. It's quite a broad transversal mandate. Just about every sphere of government does something about rural development, whether you're talking about the local government, whether you're talking about province, but also just about every other sector department does something about rural development. Education, they've got a huge budget to provide basic infrastructure in rural areas, human settlements, health, and so on and so on and so on. So we are saying our role, as we say in our mission, we are a catalyst, we are a facilitator, we are a coordinator. We have been given this responsibility by the President of being a coordinating department that coordinates the efforts of other departments. So not all of these things that need to be done should be done by ourselves. What assists us in terms of the outcome-based approach is that there are two oversight structures that have been created in terms of the outcome-based approach. At a political level, the ministers at a national level who are signatories to outcome number 7, with MECs from provinces who are responsible for the portfolio on agriculture and rural development, and district mayors sit and constitute an oversight committee that monitors the work of the departments across the three spheres of deputy minister. We submit these reports on a quarterly basis to the presidency, the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. We have submitted our first report. Our next report to monitor our performance is going to be in May, which the minister will have to submit again to the presidency so that they see at that level whether we are moving towards achievement of those targets, whether we've got charities, and what we are doing with those charities. The second one is a technical one that comprises the DGs of this department, the heads of departments, the district municipal managers, who also sit on a quarterly basis to make sure that indeed there is work that is being done by themselves now and the officials of their department. This is where we deal with things, with issues at a project level now. We have identified things that we are going to do, what land we are going to buy, and where in the provinces. The municipal managers, heads of departments, and DG must make sure that indeed that land is acquired at appropriate location. There's food security, there are targets that are set in terms of, for instance, agriculture that must be built. The DGs, the heads of departments, and municipal managers must make sure that those targets are met, and we report to the ministers the political oversight structure.
Second, now you speak as if there's no need for us to have access to that unless you call for it. It's a side issue that we should have sight of this report. Why?
Okay. But I don't check.
Yeah. He says the first report has been submitted. He tells us, he says, for your information. There is no requirement that we should have access to the information as an oversight responsibility of Parliament. Why? No, is it unjustified to ask for the report?
There's nothing wrong if you request the report. We thought that.
But request the report.
But Chief, there's a lot of information we can bring here. We must bring what is relevant to you. Sometimes we might think that this information is not for the committee, but if the committee says this information we need it, we must give the information.
Congratulations, dear. See, the key issue here, dear, you know, no structure in the world, not only in South Africa, no structure in the world would play any effective supervisory role or oversight role unless they have access to information. Now, the ministers report to the presidency, and the presidency will look at performance and the levels of performance and the quality of performance and value for money. And then they will judge on that basis. Because they have access to that information. Parliament, if we do not have access, you can imagine if you did not mention that there is a report, we would not be able to say, give us the report. That is why the question around whether we're entitled to this information or not is relevant here. Because if you did not mention that, we would not know, and therefore we would not have played our effective oversight role as Parliament. The people you're talking about really have a subjective responsibility to report about their own performance. Tina, we've got an objective responsibility to say, you did it, let us examine it. It's unlike you examining yourself. So please, give us the information. Don't decide it's not relevant.
We thought that for now, we're dealing with the strategic plan. We think that there's going to come a particular time, or in the timetable, where you need 1, 2, 3 or this and that, as per the program. But for today, my understanding is you want our strategic plans and our budgeting. That's for today. That's my understanding.
Information. The appropriation committee, which is the one that looked at your figures financially, gets that report on a quarterly basis. They don't get only figures. They get information that says, where did you spend the money? In the view of the department, we are not entitled to that information. It's for your, it's for, what do they call it? On a note, on a need to know basis. We are an oversight structure of parliament. It is our responsibility to know. Not unless you say, go and investigate, like Ms. Janssen is saying. I will never forget Ms. Janssen. I really will never forget it.
I think there's a misunderstanding. I thought the DG is saying, given the new approach, outcomes approach, we've just submitted our...
Yes, please, with all respect.
Yes.
When a report becomes available, and the department takes a decision who to give. The point I'm making is that we are excluded in that list of organizations that must receive that report. That's all I'm making. Because when you know who should receive the report, who is in your list of those who must receive the report, you should be saying the presidency, the technical team, and parliament. So if you exclude that, in my view, it's not an accident of history. It's a deliberate decision to say they don't need to know this. Let's leave this one. Because you see, these reports are not for compliance. These reports are about your conduct as a department. That's why we pass the budget. The budget is not passed by the president. It's passed by us here in parliament. And then we have to know how you spend the budget. Please, Chief. I will not go with Mr. Beverly Janssen again.
I will not.
Okay. Passing short on this matter. We're not attempting to do when we started the I think Chief Whip, you remember, there was a Bloom Balfour syndrome. Those who remember when we started the work of the portfolio committee, there was this albatross of a Bloom Balfour syndrome. When that Bloom Balfour syndrome died, there was a Boy Sisulu public spat. We took our own collective decision here as the portfolio committee. All parties agreed we will not go and seek information via the media. We will not try to embarrass anybody. We will work with you to give us information so that we can do our work effectively. We took that decision. Nobody asked us to do that. We did that deliberately. Even now, there is no attempt to try to expose anything. All we say is, in order for us to be able to do our work effectively, give us the information. Let us make the judgment call ourselves whether we need this information or we don't. Don't decide for us. That's all I'm saying.
And the second is from what you said, not from what you said, but you want to take it over the fire and walk with you. Go ahead.
I think there's one... there are two questions I must deal with and then hand over to my colleagues. One of the things is that why we have adopted the new outcome-based approach with five outputs, as a coordinating department, we have got a responsibility to ensure that all of those are implemented by other departments. Hence, they remain on, they are on our strategic plan, because we must constantly keep them on track. We must be able to monitor their implementation. But two, when the new department, when the new mandate came to the department, and a new department was created, there are old mandates that remain. For instance, you still have to do your deed registration in South Africa. You still have got to do, to retain the function of cadastral management, the surveying of land across the country. There's still information, there's still the responsibility of the mapping of South Africa. We are the mapping authority of South Africa. We still remain a custodian of state land in South Africa. So that is why you will see that our strategic goals are too many. But the other thing is that we also did not focus enough in the past on corporate governance. Our audit reports, our annual reports show those weaknesses quite clearly. So we thought that we'll elevate that into a strategic goal, so that we are able to deal with the governance issues in the department, to eliminate the qualifications, the risks, and so on and so on. Hence, you see that there's a huge number of strategic goals and the number of priorities. And by the way, it's a huge department, probably with three departments in one that we're talking about here, and hence the number of the strategic goals. The land audit, we committed ourselves to this committee last year and the year before last because of the audit qualification. And this committee asked us to literally put our heads on the block and say, when shall you complete the land audit? In view of what we saw, we said we needed a little bit more time. We made the same comment to SCOPA. We said 2012-11. What I can, however, say is that on the program of this committee, the department at some future date is supposed to come back to the committee and make a presentation on the work, on the progress we've made to date with regard to the audit of state land. Without going into any detail, I'm saying, Chatterson, we are ready to come when invited to make presentation on the progress we've made to date with regard to the audit of state land in response to Honorable Masipuwe's question. Mm-hmm. May I invite, starting with Dr. Swartz, and then Acting DDG Ashari, and Dr. Mahalama.
Honourable Chairperson, I am going to do my best to respond to the question that was raised. How have you formulated the NARISEC program? And also to the question that was formulated, how many young people have thus far been recruited, and how many young people will be recruited in the National Rural Youth Service Corps? I'm beginning with the first one. How has it been formulated? In its conceptual stages, the department approached the Department of Higher Education and discussed this huge vision of using young people in rural areas as agents for rural transformation. In the first quarter of last year, just over 122 representatives from all FETs in the country were gathered together in Johannesburg to discuss the National Rural Youth Service Corps. How do we best skill young people who are unemployed in rural areas as agents for rural transformation? The principals gave their inputs, and afterwards we came up with a program that we constructed with the assistance of the University of South Africa, piloting the first phase of the NARISEC by recruiting at least 3 young people in each of the just about 2,900 rural wards in the country. Steps SA advised us that you are dealing with just over 2,900 rural wards in the country. And so we began by a process of recruitment. We advertised in newspapers, in municipal offices, in ward offices all over the country. Some other areas, there are no radios to reach. Some other areas, no newspapers to reach. So we physically went to tribal authorities and we requested that we be assisted in the open public recruitment processes of at least 3 young people per rural ward, plus an additional young person with some form of disability. So at least the intention was to go for 4 young people, balancing the gender between male and female 50-50. That process of recruitment then is followed by the process of selecting the young people, sitting with municipalities and getting each and every ward councillor to be present as we discuss the appropriateness of a young person from his or her ward. It then gets followed by a process of signing the contracts with all of those young people that are selected. We had an intention of really exposing these young people to how government works. And so we worked in collaboration with the further education and training colleges where they were exposed to how government works. Many of the FEGs that collaborated successfully with us are here in the Western Cape. In Worcester, for instance, we were assisted by a college there to really expose them to what needs to be done, what is the intention of doing Lomsebenzi in Nkululeko. We have not been able, thus far, Honorable Chairperson, to recruit the 9,000 we had intended. For one reason, the province of KwaZulu-Natal was already far in advance. They have got a program of recruiting young people using them. They call them the Ambassadors Program. And so we are now standing at just over 7,700 young people that have been recruited in the first 9 to 10 months. And the intention is to then recruit the second round beginning this year, April. We want to focus specifically now on the unemployed rural graduates to be reskilled appropriately for rural transformation. We are estimating that if we are successful in the 2011-2012 year, we will be reaching just over 15,000-20,000 young people from the rural areas, taking them through various skilling processes of at least 2 years with a stipend of 60 rands as soon as they have signed a contract in collaboration with us, a stipend of 60 rands in terms of the extended public works program. It's an intensive training program of at least 2 years. The intention is to actually put young people at the center of rural transformation. Right on top, they will have one or two choices to make, whether to go on the employment route, because they already have been skilled, to go and look for employment. Those that choose to will then be recapitalized by ourselves to be put into their own enterprises. We're interested not in transforming them to good job seekers, but in becoming job givers rather than job seekers. That's it, Chief.
Chairperson, just to add on this one. It's clear when you listen to the members' concerns that somewhere on the ground the information was not properly disseminated, especially in these rural areas which he's talking about. I've been able to pick that up in some provinces. For instance, in the Eastern Cape, when you move in some rural ones, even some of the local mayors, although the district mayors would have that information. So, of course, because it was for the first intake, we think that as we go on, we are going to improve in terms of the coordination, because even the stakeholders or the structures which we wanted to put were not properly working. And Mr. Swartz would tell you that we've been conceptualizing these programs. The coordination must be at the provincial level. The implementation must be at the district or at the local level. So it's clear that there has been some discourse, but we hope that as we move for the second crop, we'll be able to improve. So we will hear all these complaints, but to the extent that we will just have to run into some of the districts, meet with some MECs and some district mayors to deal with those issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Swartz, we will sometimes take your degree away from you and bring it back to you later. The two of us are guilty of that. We will call you Mr. Swartz. I went. Found some long. Dr. Swartz, you made a presentation to the portfolio committee last year. Was it last year? This year? You said, I'm sure the honorable members from KZN would remember this. There was absolutely no young person. It was zero for KZN. Today, Dr. Swartz says, KZN was far advanced. So, you see, slip of the tongue for us, for you, but for us is a major piece of information that just flows into the sentences without consciously being a responsibility for you to give us the information. Because if you discovered later that the KZN you said is zero, in actual fact, more than even those provinces that you thought you had covered, and then come back to say, correction. Even when newspapers, we fight against them, at least they put a small note in the at the bottom of the page 5 and say, we want to make a correction. They don't call it a correction, they say fact, and then they correct what they made, a mistake that they made. Sometimes they say, we put a picture of Dr. Swartz, but we meant to put the picture of the deputy minister. So we get concerned when we get information on that basis through a slip of the tongue. Can you comment on that?
Chairperson, I'll be pleased to correct that conception. My tongue did not slip. The province of KwaZulu-Natal has got a totally different young people's program to NARISEC. They call their program the Ambassadors Program. It does not, it's a far cry from the steps. We have got about 6 steps that begin with e-recruitment and specific skilling over 2 years. It's a concerted effort to skill these young people appropriately for rural transformation. The Ambassadors Program is not designed specifically for rural transformation. It is a general program of using young people into projects that are in various departments. Many of them are not in rural areas. In as far as NARISEC is concerned, we put a zero in the table that I presented here because it is not NARISEC. Chairperson. We are busy. The DG is in discussion with the province to specifically recruit young people for the NALISEC program. It definitely is not a slip of the tongue.
But it's not removing what I say, because when you discovered this information you're talking about, you didn't come back to us to say the zero meant, did not mean that they have not recruited, but it meant that they recruited for different peoples and therefore are going to engage them to have these recruits to come into nursing. But I take your point. For us, it was new information. Maybe for Ms. Stein, it was not new information, because she understood what you were saying from her own sources. And her own sources are not the portfolio committee.
That's fine. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. With regard to the issue of how are we intending to start the rollout of CRDP and where, just to indicate that we have already started the rollout of CRDP from 2009, and as we speak now, we're in just over 60 wards in the country. That is the information that we can make available to the committee with the exact wards and districts as was requested by the member. But in terms of the 180 wards that we are going to be moving into in the new financial year, and 540 in total by 2014. What we have done is that in the country, as DDG Swas has indicated, there are approximately 2,920 rural municipalities from, you know, the kind of definition that we put into rural. And what we want to do is make sure that we are in 180 rural municipalities in the country to start with. And we are then selecting 180 of the most vulnerable wards in those municipalities. And we're doing that by looking at the different rankings in terms of your poverty index matrix, et cetera, but also through discussions with the relevant municipalities and districts as well. So that's how the wards for each year are being selected. But the 180 for the current financial year are already in the process of being finalized. The first 60 are confirmed, and the profiling is to begin on those. As we speak, they already started, so that the work will flow into the new financial year as well. But where we are right now, Chair, we can give you a clear indication of those wards as well as the districts and the provinces. We are currently working in all 9 provinces, and the wards that are selected will cover all 9 provinces of the country. Thanks, Chair. Thank you, DG.
You know, it seems as if your targets are changing now and then. Because when looking at your 2010 to 2018, on page 12, you indicated that over the MTEF period, the department intends to implement this program in 160 rural wards throughout the country. But in this, in a surplus, in this one, I think you've talked of 180 somewhere. That is the problem that you're making, of not submitting this annual performance plan. Now you've been talking of 540. Can you clarify that?
Can I clarify, Chair? I think that when we set that original target of 160, the CRDP was very much a very new program. And we still had to do a clear analysis of the area and the scope of work that was required. What we have found is that as we begin to do CRDP, as the DG has indicated, we have different roles to play in terms of being a coordinator, a catalyst, a facilitator, an implementer, and an initiator. And what we're seeing is that with our current resources, we're still able to reach many more wards than we had originally indicated in that strat plan. And that is why the amendment has been made from the original 160 up until 2014 to now 540, because we're seeing that we have the capacity to actually go into much more than we had originally said. To give an indication, in the last financial year, we had said we'd be in 25 wards in the country. But as we conclude this financial year, we'll be in excess of 45 wards in the country.
So clearly we would not want to under target for ourselves, because we believe that we are able, with working together with other sector departments, actually reach out to more wards in the country than we had originally planned. But the point is taken that in terms of the ATT, the wards that we'll be covering per quarter are clearly indicated, and you will find that in the document when it is submitted, Chair. Sorry?
I think the Honourable Member, Mr. Chair, the Honourable Member is emphasizing the point which I made earlier to Dr. Swart, that when you give us information here, because we make notes, and also we're not old that much not to remember. So when you come back and give us more information, and it differs with the original information, we wonder. And sometimes we wonder aloud. So that's why she's raising the question. And it is important for you, when you make your plan and you want to change it, to share it with us. Even if you don't come here, you can just give us a piece of paper. You remember, Dr. Swart, maybe you don't. I'm sure DG will remember. When you came here originally introducing CRTP, we then asked the question. There were three or four other programs before CRTP. We were told they were pilot rural development program. What is it that you have learned in those ones that you will change in the new CRTP? And we were promised that that information has not been undertaken, the study has not been undertaken, but as we go on, you will fuse the information learned from those ones and put it into the CRTP. Before we have received that, you are now telling us that you are rolling out. Now, rolling out without the lessons for us is problematic, but you may not be rolling out without the lessons, because you may have the report. We don't have that report. That's what we are trying to emphasize. We are not, you know, when I was young, there was a small book, Chunky Charlie. Some of you who are older than me will remember that book, and the younger ones may not remember the book. The book usually always had a page, find a mistake. We're really not seeking to find mistakes. We just want to have information so that we can do our work effectively. That is the emphasis of the committee. It is not to find mistakes at all. Thank you, Dr. Mahalemele, you wanted to take over.
Thank you, Chair. First and foremost, I just want to make some preliminary statements. The fact that the disaster management is a government program, and therefore a joint venture amongst many departments, and for this purpose, then there has been an interministerial committee set up to deal with the issue of disasters in this country. And as such, as the department responsible for rural development and land reform, we just focus our attention to those disasters occurring within the rural communities. And also to mention that this is a new mandate that we came up with in the department, and therefore the program itself within the department is still in its infancy. But then the third point also that I want to make before I respond is the point that was made by our DG, the fact that you really cannot plan enough for disasters, because this is why they're called disasters. A case in point would be the recent disasters that have hit Japan. Nobody would have been prepared for such a disaster. So our main aim within the department is to mitigate against these disasters. In other words, to reduce the impact that can be felt as a result of these disasters. And then in terms of the plan that we have, is then to try and understand, to try and assess
the environment and the areas, and also bearing in mind that there is now this concept of climate change. And for this reason, then, we have now an MOU between the department and the South African Weather Services,
South,
which then assist us in terms of predicting adverse weather conditions that may result in disasters. And then the one plan that we have also is then to create awareness and training within our rural communities. And to this effect, we have printed pamphlets that then creates awareness within our rural communities that has been printed in different languages so that the communities may be aware of possible disasters that can happen within their areas. Recently, Chairperson, we've been hit by a series of disasters, let's say from December last year up to today. I was just listening to the news that, you know, in fact, every week almost we're being hit by disasters. I just heard today that also we've been hit here in the Western Cape in Makazo by some fires, which then killed 6 people. So we have been responding recently to immediate disasters. But what we normally do is to go to this area that have been affected by disasters, do some scoping visits, try to understand the underlying causes and do a post-disaster assessment. Like, for example, we went to Ishowe together with the minister for some time, last year was it, or early this year, where then we discovered that those two households that were struck by lightning, the cause could have been that those houses are built on dolerite, which tends to attract lightning. Also, the method of the building itself, although the roof is thatch, then there is this thing that people now like to, on top of that thatch roofing, to put the iron cold, which then also is very, very bad for lightning. And then also we've come up with then the immediate intervention plans, like we've been going around now to these rural communities that have been affected by either the storm, the floods, and the lightning, to see how then we can just bring some kind of relief to these households. Most recently, we went with the Deputy Minister to the Eastern Cape. There was also a household where 5 people died within one house. And when, I think it was social development, we're trying, and other organizations, to try and bring some foodstuffs as a relief, they said, where do we put it? We don't even have a house now. So in those instances, then we provide what we call emergency structures, which we believe are much better than the tents that have been provided previously by some NGOs and other organizations. These structures are durable, they are made of aluminium, and they bring some kind of decency, and they've got windows, enough ventilation. They can actually be taken out and moved to some other place once a permanent structure is built, so that in a cycle, then they can also assist other communities. We also then provide, in those areas that are prone to lightning, provide lightning conductors. We also then provide gas stoves. Gel stoves. We prefer gel to paraffin, and that is also how we want to educate our communities. Like, for example, we don't know the cause of fire that broke in Makazo this morning, killing 6 people. It could be also be other things like paraffin burns very fast, gel burns very slow, it's more affordable, it's you can get it easily in the local shops, and you find that that is a much better source of energy that can be used. We bring in solar lighting, it's maintenance free, And then also radio, solar radio, so that people can then listen to weather conditions. If there are any weather, adverse weather conditions, then they can be evacuated or whatever. And then also oil lamps. So all these things then have been things that we've been planning to say then after the disaster has hit. And then we've got certain criteria as well as to where then we bring those particular structures. And also just recently in KZN, we also had two families also that were struck by lightning where we have made the same intervention to assist those two families. Thank you, Chair.
Maybe what we need to request that we do as the department chair is to submit this report which talks to this, our plans, because there are short-term things which we could do, like she's mentioning, but there are also medium to long-term issues which go beyond us as a department. But I think that report will be very helpful for this particular committee to understand exactly how these things are done. On a lighter note, I thought that Ubaktebe Khulu Nobrensulu would be able to answer the why Zulu Lishakana Abafana Basasebenzi Sawazu Bakipa Bizulu Malbuya or what's happening.
Thank you, Chair. Last year, I think disaster took place at the Friday, Dabankulu, and affected also Nongoma. And the very same department mentioned that he is going to help the people building houses. How far have you gone with that project? Because I heard that clear. Abafana is still existing. PM.
Any further questions? Yeah.
Chair, maybe just to indicate that in Freyheit, yes, we've already started, we're in the process of building 110 homes together with the Department of Human Settlements, which were destroyed during that disaster in Freyheit. So we are busy with that at the moment. Thanks.
Seeing that there are no further questions, we will take a break, a deep break, and come back with the presentation of
I thought that there's something which was raised by the Honorable Masibuko. She made an example that there are certain basic things which she thinks that the department needs to focus on than to start talking about other strategic land. I also made the example of
can't we deal with that when we're dealing with the way forward?
Okay.
When we're summing up, both for the Wanyama Trust and for the department.
Thank you.
When the boys speak, my daughter,
in the house. So it may be that the house will take longer, but they will, as you would know, our ages are much more advanced to go to the house and sit and listen there in an empty stomach. So to balance between being hungry and overeat and sleep, we want to make sure we have enough resting time. Can you finish the bioscope so that we can deal with the issues?
Thank you, Chair. I'll try to use the speed that will actually make the Chair happy in the house. If I may start, Chair, the first slide is really basic to say what is it, what is ICD? It is a Schedule 3A public entity in terms of the TSMA. And hopeful that all the members are aware of that. But as a way of getting into the presentation, Chair, I would like to start by giving a brief background. This is critical because as we start 2011, 2012, it will actually ask us to understand the operations of ITB. As of last year, Chair, the board actually doubled its staff complement. However, I need to say this, that it's actually even not adequate at all. However, there is staff now that is actually driving some of the most important projects of the ITB. Also important, Chair, are the projects that ITB actually does on daily, on day-to-day basis. These projects include the consolidation of the title deeds, reconciliation of the land assets register, dealing with the transfer of the state domestic facilities, upgrade of land tenure. We also have projects on One Village, One Product. Also, being a challenge that has been with the ITB for years has been the outreach program. We have not been able to actually go to our stakeholders. And we believe that this actually has not done good for the ITB. And this coming year, we are trying to fast track that program of outreach. Also coming to that is the Act itself, Chair, as you know that it was promulgated in 1994 and amended in 1997. But however, it's still outdated if you look at the other mandates. And we are saying for us to align this coming year, we need to relook at that Act and review it. Mainly to actually assist those communities who live under the ITB then, or on the ITB then. Our mission, vision, and values are still the same, Chair. The vision being to provide the best possible land management system to communities who live on Ingonyama Trustland. And the vision being to improve the quality of life of the people living on ITB land by ensuring that the land usage is to the benefit and in accordance to the laws of the land.
I know, Chief, we were warning against a very Jansen approach of saying read. But at least suspended and yes, yes.
Well, I was actually trying to do what I thought was right, Chair, but I remember your warning, so I didn't want to repeat that. We've also tried to look at the operational environment. The key thing, or the key two things under the operational analysis or situational analysis, are the land management issues and the royalties. The core mandate of the ITB is land management. And as all we know that land is really becoming a demand, particularly within the urban setup. Everyone is looking for land which is within the ITB now. And that puts pressure and strain on management of the ITB land. We do have stakeholders who like to, don't know whether the proper word to say is to bulldoze. And in doing or trying to restrain them to doing things that aren't towards land management, we actually encounter problems in terms of relationship management.
the royalties are chair. As you know, ITD has been collecting royalties on behalf of the traditional communities, particularly where there are mining activities. And the coming of the 2S, the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Royalty Act, Act number 28 of 2008, and the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act, Act number 28 of 2002, has actually posed some challenges, because particularly the Royalty Act says all the royalties must be paid to the treasury. And those mining companies are now saying that from last year they will not pay those royalties to the traditional communities, because the Act says they should pay them to the treasury. However, that becomes a challenge, because the ITD is no longer receiving those funds for those communities. I'll come to how we're trying to address that term in the next slide. As I've also mentioned, human resources has always been a challenge to the ITB. As I say,
I beg to disrupt a little bit. Go back to your vision and mission. I know that we said don't repeat, but if you look at the vision and the mission between the overhead slides against the other document that you gave us, the strategic plan, what is written there, the mission, is a vision. And what is written in the vision is actually the mission. We didn't know that they are interchangeable.
No, you are right, Chair. It's not interchangeable. I think the person who was preparing the slide, they was that error. Yes, we have noticed it.
So you actually say we must take the one in the strategic plan?
Yes, that's correct. This one, there is an error. Chair, I was under organizational environment looking at the HR, human resources, and as I said in the first slide that as of last year, we've actually doubled our staff. And I've also mentioned that that also is not enough on its own to actually execute the functions of the ITB effectively. And one of the things that has actually happened, Chair, is that the current structure is actually according to the organogram. And we've been feeling that the organogram was actually designed to make ITB a central office based in Pietermaritzburg, while its operations are across the province. And it becomes very difficult actually to manage the far end parts of the province working from Maritzburg. As a result, Chair, because of the increase of the staff complement, we found that the premises that we've been using in the last years are not enough, and the board has actually decided to get a new premises of which the staff, the secretariat, will be locating to it during this coming year. I've talked about the satellite offices. This is one of the things that we have found, or we are thinking will actually address some of the problems that we are actually facing in terms of managing areas that are outside Maritzburg. To say if we could have offices in districts, particularly aligning them to district municipalities or local houses, this will make ITB to be able to actually bring services closer to the client. Chairperson, this proposal has got their own constraints, as I've said. And the mitigating factors that we're trying to put in place, one is, of course, the one that I've just said of decentralization. Coming to the royalties, the board has been liaising with the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Minerals. However, that matter has not been finalized at the moment, but there are those engagements. Coming to how we plan to improve the quality, Chair, there are three areas that we've identified. The first one being land management. We are saying we need to have plans and do land audits
particularly to what we refer to as exclusive land. We are also saying for this coming year we need to develop a comprehensive communication strategy that will assist the board in its outreach program. We are also saying under support to traditional communities on ITB land to say we need to assist them, particularly in developing some business proposals. As I've said, that land is becoming scarcer and scarcer in municipality. We are finding more and more developers coming into the ITB land, approaching traditional communities, trying to put up the developments there. And the traditional communities, in turn, they come to us to say, can you advise as legal landowners on how to get these programs or projects in our land? We are therefore saying the ITB should play a role in facilitation of that. Chairperson, the map that we see there is KZN, and all the green areas are the land that is under ITB. The last recorded figure was 2.8, but that has increased due to the other parcels of land that has been transferred from the department to ITB. We are now sitting at about 2.8. ITB has about 1,491 titles. We also have land in almost all the local municipalities within the province. And key, almost half of the population of the province live on Ingonyama Trust land. And also, which is very important, and we also try to actually explain this to people whom we meet on a daily basis, to say that although we've got about 300 Amakhosi in the province, there are only 241 that actually reside within the jurisdiction of the ITB land. As I've said, the act that we used is Act No. 3 of 1994, as amended. It was amended in 1997, and that has been long, as I've said. We are proposing that it needs to be amended again. Chair, we've identified Outcome 7 and Outcome 8 as what ITB should align with. And as I've said, land management is one of those areas within those outcomes that we're trying to focus on in the coming year. There are also issues of projects. There are partnerships, as I've said, that more and more developers are trying to venture onto the ITB land. And the fourth one is the area of enhancement of capacity, which we believe is more of an internal thing to do. Under land management, Chair, I've said that we want to actually develop comprehensive strategies of how to manage the land. And one of the challenges that we've got is our asset register. It has been a challenge in the previous year. We're also trying to address it in this coming year. We're doing audits of trust farms. These are the farms that were used by the Department of Agriculture and then were transferred to ITB, and some of them have not been in use, or some of them have people have actually who are using them now. We are trying to make an audit of all the trust farms that were given to ITB. The 100 hectares project is key. We have identified 9 Amakhosi, and we are in discussion with them to actually, in the coming year, to start the project of 100 hectares. The land audit project will continue, particularly at Mpumalanga. There have been challenges, legal challenges, in that there have been titles that are sort of duplicated, underlying titles, and it has been very difficult to actually resolve the issues of transfer from Mpumalanga. We are saying also under land management, we enter into what is called development and planning cooperative agreements with the local municipality. This is also done in conjunction with the traditional council, which is within that area. Chairperson, the issue of, I'll call it squatting, is becoming a problem. And we hope this will be addressed by the land management strategy that we'll put. It has been
become a norm that whoever knows, if you say this land is ITB, the following month or the following day it will be occupied. And we have noticed that this will actually work negatively to our land management plans. In terms of projects, we have got four broad areas that we try to address. The first one is agribusiness, which more or less covers the 100 acres project. There are projects that are under socioeconomic upliftment. There are projects that are educational, and there are projects that are cultural. These projects are a little bit different than what I refer to as development projects, because the development projects is where the traditional community is looking for a venture, or there is someone who wants to put a business within the traditional council and approaches Ingonyama as the legal landowner and say, please assist us to assess this model of business or this package. This is what we call it a partnership in development projects. Enhancement of capacity, I've said that this is what we also try to do this year. It also hinges on a number of things. One of them, as I've said, is that we're saying we relocate at our organogram, and the second one is to say we need to decentralize our offices. Chairperson, as you know, or let me not assume, ITB has got two sources of funding. The first source of funding is what is referred to as own funding out of its own trading activities. The second source is what we refer to as transfer from the department. In the coming year, Chair, under own funding, the ITB has budgeted almost 69.3 million, and this will make about 91% of the total budget for the coming year. Under the transfer, the department has budgeted 6 million, and this is about 8% of the total budget for the ITB. Chairperson, under the own funding, there is a policy on disbursement that we use. We say any amount that we collect within traditional communities or in a particular traditional community, 90% is reinvested to that traditional community, and 10% is invested in ITB for its operation. This also explains that. Chairperson, coming to look at our strategic objectives, as it has been said, we have not also done the operation plan, but we promise that it will come with the department operation plan. We have identified about 9 strategic objectives, Chair. The first one is to administer and manage and control ITB land. And our performance indicator there is number of cooperative agreements entered into and implemented by the stakeholders, which is TCs, LMs, and ITB. Our target for 11-12 is 3. The second strategic objective is to ensure the optimum usage of land for the benefit of communities and other occupiers. The performance indicator there is percentage of appropriate land tenure applications approved by the board. And we are saying almost 50% of the received applications should be approved. Chairperson, we would like to emphasize approved there because there is a comment that has always been put by Treasurer. We might receive more than 100, but if approved is 100, if it's 50, then we say, we try to balance that because the Treasurer was saying, look, if you have received 100 and 10 were approved, it's not what you have actually indicated in your performance indicators. So we're trying to address that in this strategy again. Item 3 is more or less the same as item 1 in terms of strategic objectives, but the indicators are different. The performance indicator for item 3 is to have a reconciled register. It has been ongoing. We're just saying we need one reconciled asset register. We also have a performance indicator of number of land tenure records inputted. This is an electronic system or database that we are using, which is called Land Tenure Information System. Our target for the year is 700. Item 4 is to ensure the optimal usage of land again. And the performance indicator, we're saying number of exclusive land parcels identified and tailor-made land management plan developed and implemented. We're saying 2 there. Chairperson, there is always a question, what is meant by exclusive land? Let me try to address it before I go further. Inclusive land, in simple form, refers to the land where there is a traditional authority or traditional council. Exclusive land will refer to the land where there is no traditional council, but it belongs to IPV. Under item 5, we talk about the outreach program. We'll try to have 5 for this coming year. Item 6, we talk of the identification of potential businesses and development opportunities within the communities living on ITB. Number of traditional communities are assisted and supported in identification of business opportunities is our performance indicator, and we have put 2. Item 7 is more of internal, to look at policies within ITB, and we have put policies in finance and HR. Item 8 is to develop 2 strategies, one that deals with HR and the other that deals with communication. As I've said, we've had several challenges in the communication part. Item 9 looks at the traditional council that we need to support during the year. We've said at least 10. Chairperson, for the income projections, I would like to give to Mr. Mayor. That's it.
Thank you, Chairperson. In view of the time available, I will summarize the budget requirements of the ITB. Firstly, I must state that the ITB receives funding, or the funding for ITB is from 2 sources. First is from the own funding, which is the training activities, and the second is from the transfer payment from the Department of Land Affairs. Slides 23 to 26 reflects the detailed income and expenditure. I will summarize this. Firstly, the budget has been aligned to the strategic plan. The budget is based on the baseline amount allocated by the department. The total trust budget has increased by 26.8% from 2010-11 to 2011-2012 due to the increased activities of the ITB and also the increasing of the capacity of the ITB. In terms of staff costs, 4.14% of the budget has been allocated to staff costs, which is the salaries. 95.86% has been budgeted for goods and services, which includes capital expenditure. 31.49% has been allocated to capital expenditure. Operating expenditure, including salary, is 68.51%. As I've mentioned earlier, increase in expenditure is due to the ITB increasing its staff capacity in order to obtain and achieve its vision and objectives noted in the strategic plan over the MTEF period. Administration expenditure will also increase, or we budgeted an increase for admin expenditure due to ITB acquiring its own premises, whereby there would be expenditure such as insurance, security, telephone, some of which is paid by the department now. Thank you, sir.
Those who do not own. Can you explain what was the original purpose of establishing the board? How has the mandate of the board changed, or shall we say evolved over time? what does it have to do now when it has to meet its objectives? I'll explain why. In other provinces, the department, according to the DG, has joint ventures with the district municipalities, provincial municipalities, and so on, and other departments of national government. But in your area of jurisdiction, it's you who's doing this.
Some municipal areas. I just want to find out what is that saying, and obviously it's not going to come into effect. But what effect will this have if it comes? Will it have a negative effect on the Ikonyama Trust, or will it have a positive effect? Or I think the fact that it will come into enacted is beside the point here. I just wanted to find out if it should have happened, what would be the effect? It was just funny for me to read it in this document, Chairperson. And then, Chairperson, my last question is also it's to the Ikonyama Trust, but also to the department. The amount of money that the department annually gives to the Ikonyama Trust, what is it used for? Do they have a memorandum of agreement or understanding that's signed to say you get this money to do A, B, C, and D? Or do you just get a nice check every year and you don't have to report on how it was spent? I'm asking the question because I see this basically in the same light that the departments are writing memorandums of understanding with other strategic partners in order to have land reform benefits for South Africans. So that's the other one. And then lastly, Chairperson, I'm having a query regarding the amounts of hectares of the trust. I've just asked someone that's in the business to do a deep search for me in Ikonyama Trust last year, and they have come up to an amount of 4 million hectares, and I will supply it to the department. I actually wanted to speak to the DG about this. Somewhere there's a huge gap. And if we don't solve this whole thing of the assets and the register, and it's coming back to that first question of land, asset and management and registered in South Africa, we will always have this. And this, I would link this question to the court case against the Ikonyama Trust. It was reported last year. It's off the report. I don't know what happened to that. My own worry about this is that if we don't know who owns what land where, we will never be able to solve this. And I actually want to pose this back to the department. In their strategic plan, and I've just read it, they say, Program 2, objective statement, to survey and register 30,000 hectares of state land and trust land. But on the Ikonyama Trust land, it's 2-point-something million hectares. So the department wants to survey 30,000 hectares by 2014, but only Ikonyama Trust have 2.7, which is disputed from my figures, 4 million. When will we ever do this?
Thank you, Chairperson. During the presentation, the presenter made mention of the inclusive and exclusive land. My question here is based on the development in the land that he has referred to as inclusive land. We find that there is no development with regards to low-cost housing projects in the areas where I would say inclusive land, as was mentioned. If I may make an example, there's an area under Umlalazi, area of Inkosi Nzuza, where a low-cost housing project was identified from 2004. Up until now, nothing is happening in that area, but the residents are people under a traditional authority, which is the Inkosi Nzuza area. And secondly, there is another same challenge that has come up in Kambanana municipality, where people of Inkosi Mthiyane's area, a second section under Ward 8 has been excluded from getting the benefits of local housing projects, simply because they are told the land is under Ikonyama, so nobody can do anything on that land. But if you go out there, currently people are residing in the area. So my question is just based on that. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. When looking at this document on page 4, it seems as if the Ngonyama Trust has relocated to the new premises, because they've written, however, as from December 2010, although you're saying you will, but 2010 has passed. Then can I get a clarity on that one? Because it's confusing. Here we are saying we are still going to relocate here December 2010. Then the other question, Chairperson, is on the presentation. I understand that you want to decentralize services to district municipalities. I was just looking at your budget. We are talking about new offices, but you don't tell us how many offices and how much have you budgeted for each office, because it's impossible, according to me, it's impossible to establish 9 district offices once, unless you have got money to mend those offices. Then the other one is on the projects, agribusiness. You will support the communal gardens 100 hectares project. Is there any involvement of the Department of Rural Development and the Department of Agriculture in such projects? And also, how many co-ops are you going to support in this financial year? And what form of support are you going to provide to those co-ops? And also, at what cost? On the bursary one, that one has been asked. Then the other one is on the increase of staff complement. You have said you have recruited 90% support staff to secretaries. But maybe to just indicate to us how many people are you going to recruit in this forthcoming financial year, 11-12? How much is budgeted for those people that you will recruit? Then the last one is on page 19. The issue of the asset register that is to be reconciled. Your first target is 150,000. Are you going to outsource the service, or are you going to do it internally? Then the other one, number 7, you said you want to review and maintain the policies that is said review of ITP legislation. You have budgeted 150,000, then you have set 2, in the next financial year 50,003, the other year 25,002. Can you just clarify, is there any logic, especially on the budget allocation for what you are planning to do here? Then the other one, you said you want to develop a comprehensive human resource and communication strategy. You are saying 150,000. Then in the other years, you don't have any targets, just budgeted 50,000. I clarify you also on that one. Thank you,
Chairperson. I'll start with the impression that the
when it was established in 1994. Chair, we've got the board member, I don't know whether Inkosi Ngaleni Faria, a sporting god, is one of the people who can really talk about the real establishment in 1994. He was part of the people who were there. But basically, I can try to run through. I think he can add where I've left. The main purpose, which I think was to say, ultimately, the board was to transfer the land to the traditional communities. Each traditional community was to own its land. Has that mandate changed over years? I think yes. Through a number of developments, through changes in the environment, and as one that I've indicated, that gradually, with the demand of land, things are really changing. As everyone is looking at ITB land for other things, probably not the things that were envisaged by then in 1994. I'm saying gradually, I think the board member can also add there, the board is seeing its role as assisting really those communities in terms of development. I think also that will also probably be clarified by their request that they will put forward soon to say the act needs to be reviewed because it's really outdated if you look at what's actually the situation at the present moment. The board is of the opinion that it should be aligned to the current demands and needs of the community. That's what I can say, Chair. But if the board member wants to add something, I think he'll add.
No, thank you, Chair. Nothing to be added.
Thank you, Chair. The main purpose of this legislation, as it is stated in the original act, it was for Moyama Trust was established to administer the former KwaZulu territory as the nominal owner on behalf of the Zulu people who live on it. That is its main purpose as it stands in the legislation today. In other words, as the National Department of Rural Development and Land Reform is the nominal owner of land in the other former homelands, namely your former Ciskei, Transkei, and so on, that is the responsibility of Ingwenyama Trust in KwaZulu-Natal. In the rest of the country, the department doesn't. In other words, anybody wants to use that land, wants to change land use, the Ingwenyama Trust, as the title holder of that land, has the ultimate authority to approve just on insofar as land use only is concerned, and nothing else. That is what the Act says, Act 3 of 1994.
Yeah, I like that, DG, but could you venture into what the gentleman has done to, over time, the Act did not change, but the way administered from the side of the board has been evolving to include other aspects.
Chair, what I'm aware of is that as the custodian of the land in Ingwenyama Trust, as has happened elsewhere in the country, you have a whole range of people, developers in the main, wanting to do certain things on this Ingwenyama Trust land, whether they want to mine, whether they want to put commercial development. That responsibility of land administration has evolved over a period of time, wherein they just no longer sit back and wait for somebody to come and knock on the door. In their case, they've gone out to even identify potential development opportunities to uplift those particular areas. That is the evolution, I think, that they are referring to, where they are saying they want to be catalyst for development in that area. They hold the land, which they regard as a massive resource. They are able to see that in this coastal belt, for instance, there are these development opportunities that are coming elsewhere along the coast. Can we attract investors to come and invest in these communities, in whatever form of investment, whether through tourism and other commercial development? That is the kind of evolution that I'm aware of. I do see that they do other things as well, which have got nothing to do with administration chair. And I think perhaps they needed to draw that distinction very clearly. The other things that they do that have got nothing to do with administration is that out of revenue generated from communities through land administration activities such as leases, royalties, and so on, money gets accumulated in the fund of Ingwenyama Trust. Then they go back to communities and say, what can we do with this money to help you? Then they start poultry projects and these other things, which are not really land administration functions. Thank you.
Both of you have ignored the last part of the question that relates to the roles of other institutions within that same territory.
Chair, if I understand the question well, the role of other role players.
Yeah, both the department and the Ingwenyama Trust, in fact the department more, explained the partnership responsibilities of the facilitator, the initiator, and so on, with the district sphere, with the provincial sphere, and other departments at the national level. My dilemma is, in the area administered by the board, are those activities not taking place with these other partners? If they are, how does the trust align itself with that? That's my question.
Chair,
it would be easier if the department is answering that, because they are the ones who are initiating this process.
I don't want to put you on the spot.
Chair, Ingwenyama Trust is not an island in which the laws of the Republic do not apply. These activities apply on Ingwenyama Trust land. I heard the Honorable Mtuan Zulu saying what is happening in Kwanongoma. For instance, in our priority list for the revitalization of irrigation schemes, Mululwane Usutu is on that list, which means that we are doing these things in these areas. We are currently working in Umsinga, KwaZulu-Natal, which is one of our CRTP sites. That is Ingwenyama Trust land that involves two traditional leaders. We have rolled it, we have done profiling in the Sisonke district of KwaZulu-Natal. We are now going to be moving towards Melmoth, another traditional authority area under Ingwenyama Trust. So indeed, this work is happening under Ingwenyama Trust. There is work that is happening on Ingwenyama Trust land. I think the critical question, Chair, that you are asking is the role of the board itself. I think that's a weak area, I must admit, Chair, up front, in terms of what the board envisages as its role in that particular space. But certainly the department is engaged and is involved with local, district, and provincial government in KwaZulu-Natal in the areas of jurisdiction of Ingwenyama Transport. But the interface between the board and the department is quite weak. Thank you.
Because
I think I'm going to have to do a little bit of a little. Okay. Because we have to do a little bit of 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 a little. Ni I'm understanding that the Alabama is going to shepherd the boys, Allah, because also I said that local and what I will be on about July. I'm not going to be July. Nifuna and Janigati, because I'm going to be on the way out. Once, I should have opened, put the hand again, good at the tools. I should have opened, put the Mokana, put the hand in bed, no leave. Oh, Baba, Baslavana, Bama Kosi, Bashangan, and Lulan Silaba, Ukona in Duna Bingos. Zinenda aza inuwa umaspala kumbe che. Kulume na loo ya babo kwa ukomishna dala. Waham. Kwezo mnyu ukomishna na kuluma na waham. So kulume mnyu ukomishna nangu na uzo haba kufata. Kukono waham utiti. Kukwa ba ueting titi. Ndo kulume mnyu titi. Until today. Uhambingo nyama kufata enye nga ya. So kukona enye manje nai. So nayo izotula leli ikule lilodwa ukuthi basiza abantu monke uyabadlalela abantu abafuna ukusizwa abayibo nifuna abantu abanjani ngingichaze la ukuthi abanjani labo nifuna ukubasiza si understand kahle bakwethu ngoba phela sesikhathele lathi ukufonelwa abantu besikhalela singenalo lutho thina ezandleni nina ninemali ye department ninemali yezonya ama trust but nibekile le mali ukuthi koze kushihloboze niqala ukuthi yanele kuphi hayi.
The first time we heard of Baba Nangu was from her. It is true she has been raising the question of Baba Nangu for the past 2 years. Which has we as Baba Nangu? Even if Zanga Ayegu, you go to Israel, Kumam Keys. The department also knows the story of Baba Nangu. Umumkiso is justified. Mhlambe the energy I seven sayo to raise the matter today is because akavi mentionwa nakule priority list ka DG, akavi mentionwa nakule ye ngonye ma trust.
Abakade leye che.
Kwazo kuphendula kanjani kanye ukuhamba umkhize.
Badlala ngemali yababa.
In the house yesterday, four speakers raised the question about the behavior of the people that booed Ms. Dillian. And the question that arose from other speakers is why the most senior leader did not react to that bullying on the spot. You see, Umam Kizer is justified in raising the question, but to behave like that is unjustifiable. Unfortunately, she's not here for me to talk to her. You know, in all organizations, whether they are rugby, soccer, or dance, or anything, when somebody says something in a meeting, the person on the chair, if that is unbecoming of the speaker, must deal with it on the spot. So what I'm trying to say is that, yes, Chief, Baba Nangu is a pain in the neck for Mamu Mkiz. And there's no indication that anybody is listening to her. Perhaps you would comment on why it is not being attended to, even though it has been raised so many times. Both to the department and to the Ngonyama Trust. What seems to be the problem? Let's discard their behavior. Let's deal with the content of the question.
were concluding the question that I raised earlier,
that in the territory called the land of Ingonyama Trust, there is also the issues of the district work, the provincial department work, and the partnership at national level of the departments. And yet, the role of Ingonyama Trust is undefined in that scheme of things. This is what we prefer to hear. Because you see, Chief, there may be a duplication, or there may even be contradiction. So if we could find a way to make sure that the money that you have and the money that you receive can go an extra mile to multiply the work that is being done by other partners in that area, it will make your work even easier, rather than to operate as if you are, who did you say, you are not an island. But we don't hear how you dovetail these other activities. I know that there are areas where the department, for instance, will not collect royalties. You will do that. So in the context of your administration, you do those other functions. But the developmental functions that you explained you are moving into now, you should be joining forces with other players in the area. Thank you very much. Let's move on. Is there anybody who wants to volunteer some information about Babanang? Yes, teacher.
Chair. I'm sorry about the fact that we may not be reporting anything specific about Babanang. As the CEO of the Ingonyama Trust Board said, there are 300 traditional communities in KwaZulu-Natal. We don't have footprint in all of them, including Babanango. All I can say now is that I am certainly aware that there are land claims in Babanango. I do know that there are challenges. I can ask through the Chief Land, Acting Chief Land Claims Commissioner, for a progress report to say what is happening in Babanango insofar as the land claim is concerned. Honorable Kaba referred to the two previous commissioners going in there and out, in there and out, without any having anything to show. All that I can offer is to get the status quo report, to find out what is going on, and see how we can fast track that particular process.
Sasho ukuthi ke ayifithi lapha enhlanganisweni kodwa ke ungayiphendula le ndaba esenababanango manje not kulindelwe ukhomishina yokuthi i-land claim indawo because wawushilo originally when you raise the matter yasebabanango ukuthi i-land claim abaphume belungu kwangena abantu abamnyama namakhosi wabo kwenze kanti manje uyayazi uyayazi loo ndaba.
Thank you. Ukuthi abantu banemali bamane beza nalo abezobhalelana la emaphini banale imali engako kodwa ayikwazi ukusiza laba bantu abanomhlaba wabo osuwathenga osoko wabo ngihlale ngiyibeka umntu bayayazi ngacacisa the ukuthi njengoba usho uxolise nje ngokukwata into iyakwata izinto ehlangene nemali if abantu babona ngathi bayahalalise uthi abantu bethalalise ngathi abakuzwanga ukuthi iteli bephumela behambe ophinta amadokhumenti babuye nawo futhi bazositela basitele basitele simamele simamele baphume bahambe baphinde babuye naye amanye amadokhumeni bazositela i-strategic waya waya i-strategical waya
waya indawo.
Hayi, i-land claim kwabalanga edobheni hle ngayicacisa ukuthi kwakunomlungu abelungathi ona leya ndawo ugovernment wayithenga leya ndawo wayithengela abantu basebabanango leya ndawo inezinyamazane I think manje bakusho ukuthi 2 years abek mhlawumbe sebezigqedile abantu ngoba mane bezitshontsa bezidubula ngoba kukho umuntu ozigadile alukho ucingo izinyamazane ezinkulu nezinkomo bezilokhu zitshontswa nenkomo lomlungu ugovernment wathenga konke wathengela abantu laba abangabamnyama bezokuthithi zintshontshwa hle ngimane ngikhala kule department ale ngonyama ngilokhu ngithi zizawulunga soloko abantu bafona bagcina bengalile kuthiwa ziyantshontshwa neenkulube hle khona lapha honey project. Now the 2 years is a corner of the appeal of a condo snagged and laid. Jabaling at the new case. So then, say, what's our villa?
Hello, you were explaining what England claim in the whole.
Yeah, he around it, your lord.
There were also questions by Umamungwa Nyamabili, Umamuste. So when I went to the work, lower Kumbuzo, were overtaken, all the Minimuzo. Signed up a thing like Malangi Bindu, who lay the same with me. Who monopolized and I lay this card, who would be missing up certain related questions. Who landed the lay up in there? Chief, we are not going to disrupt. My question is the only one that was attended to. All others have not yet been attended to. The possibilities that DM, we have been doing this thing in the past. It's not something new. The possibilities that they could submit the answers in writing. And usually it's a guarantee that they will apply their minds to the question and the answer. But what you said here, and what you will say in writing, if there are contradictions, we will call you back. Can I agree with the House that they submit the answers in writing? Or because Umama Stein's question is one of the most valuable questions. She's got an independent verification of the number of hectares that are in the hands of Ngonyama Trust. Whatever Ngonyama Trust is telling us does not tally with the deeds registry pieces of land. So it is an important matter that you need to go back to. Because to answer it now is not going to help you. You need to verify your own facts before you can then say to Ms. Stein. For instance, in Ms. Stein's question, Sunduzi is not captured. So the 4 million hectares does not include Sunduzi. It does not include Ibabazane. It does not include Tekwini. It does not include Mgini. So you have land that you are not aware that you have to amount of 4 million hectares, excluding these four areas. So if you could add these four areas, you will discover that you've got lots more land than you think. So it will be better for you to verify the information that Ms. Taylor submitted here and come back to us in writing and say, aha, oh, Dr. Swartz, where is the aha moment? Can we agree that we will get these answers in writing? Unless, Baba, you want it now. The one now, Dr. Busak, was 1983. We want all our rights. We want them here. We want them now. Because we're going to go on recess, it may be important that we get the answers in writing before we go, rather than after. Remember, some of the members, when they canvass, they will go to these areas. So it is important that they get the answers in writing before we leave. And before we leave is before the 31st of March. Agreed? DG? All right. Susan, next week. Because next week we must tease more issues in the strategic plan, because we're going to be comparing the strategic plan with the APP. And then next week, Ms. Stein and other members are called upon to submit some information to you so that when you do your ATP, if there are contradictions between what you have presented here, what is in the strategic plan, and so on, should be then captured in your ATP. Thank you very much. ladies and gentlemen of the department, your leader, DM, thank you very much. We're not thanking you because we are pleased with what you have done. We're thanking you because you show that there is progress. You remember where we come from. Maybe you don't. Members here in this house will remember where we come from with you. And where we are with you now, there is a market difference. There is visible progress, especially on how you handle information. That's why information is held at high value by us, because we know what information can mean, what difference it can mean to us. The honorable members, I do not want to say this thing in front of the department. You don't do much service in your role as oversight if you don't read the documents that they supply. You are not doing the service. Because if you read the documents, you will discover there are much more contradictions in what they have been saying in the slide and what they've written in the document. Many. But we are not interested in exposing the weaknesses. What we want to do is to say, show us what you can do. Because Usho Mumkiza, you go back and produce a document, you come back and produce another document. We're not interested in the documents per se. We want the action. How do you help the people out there for which task you have been given? The last, which is not the least, Ngonyama Trust. Ngokuthumela umlayezo ngosi yam kwingonyama, angazi mna mntana mna nanawo ya kwingonyama, ukuthi le ndaba yomsebenzi wengonyama trust. Remember, if you delegate, the person who actions the delegation is a temporary one. The actual person is the owner of the delegate, the power, the one who delegates. So ingonyama, of course, he addressed us directly. Kuza nina who have been delegated by ingonyama. Ukuthi find a particular niche for yourselves within the scope of the three spheres of government, so that you can multiply the benefits of the beneficiaries from what they are doing, what you are doing, and the values in money and in the skills that are coming in there. It will help to make a good example. You see, the committee has never agitated that there should be other trusts in other form of understanding, precisely because this is a constitutional democracy. And to bring constitutional monarchies in this area will be to roll back democracy. We respect the constitutional monarchy in KZN. We support it because it stands there as a beneficiary of those people. And we will work with you to make sure that that benefit is visible. We thank you for coming. We know Tinakwanani Kangaka needs a good Ninatinzan Lapa Wunku. Saibonga Lalunda. In terms of your staff, because what would you say as we have no delegator of work? The one I will go say about, hey, I tell you, man. Don't find a delegator of work. I think it's a good thing that you brought the staff, because you judge, you want to make a judge, no decision, no judge, you are sad. We call you to young girl, you tell you, who was the little booze, who judge it, because he's a mega spank. We are a man who would in this party of our fun, a valentine. Who was a squad, who was a little booze, that's about a looking booze. Thank you very much, Chief. We really appreciate it. The meeting is a shame.